ankles, knees, and hips. You know, I was about to say like lions, tigers, and bears, oh my, because that's what it seems like.
This is Dig and Swing, a volleyball podcast for everyday coaches.
Okay, this week I bring another one of my physical therapists because that's who I am. I've seen so many, it seems like. I have Dr. Chad on the show today. We're going to talk about injuries part two because there are so many injuries in the volleyball world. And we're going to talk about some of the ones that are actually more common, which are knees, ankles. We did a little bit of shoulders with Dr. Alicia. But Dr. Chad, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself and tell everybody why we should listen to you.
Yeah, good afternoon. My name is Dr. Chad Kuntz, sports physical therapist. I had the pleasure of working with Sarah when I was out doing orthopedic residency out in Tucson. And I've gone above and beyond with my clinical doctorate as a physical therapist because I just wanted to aspire to be more. I wanted to be the best at what I'm going to do. And that's really with regards to orthopedics and sports. And so I went on and took both of those board certifications. Most people don't really know what that is, but they're both 8-hour long test that you take. You don't determine your results for like 6 months. You pay $1,500 out of cash out of your pocket just to even do it. For the sports residency, the sports test, you have to spend a lot of time on the field working with athletes, and you have to dedicate all of that just to potentially qualify. And beyond with that, you know, I live and walk the talk, so to speak. Love strength training. I've competed in a few different bodybuilding shows. And I just feel like there's a huge component that's typically overlooked in regards to traditional rehab. And so I'm constantly trying to push into more strength and conditioning and performance. And it's confusing because when people come to me, they're like, this doesn't really feel like physical therapy, you know? And so it's kind of a reframing what that word even really means. Because for those of you listening right now, if you've had an experience, of course, you're going to reference that as your experience of what physical therapy is to you. But the reality is you're being guided by someone who's using their skill set from what they've learned, which is much different than calling it physical therapy. And so I really have the pleasure of working with a lot of athletes and have really worked on a lot of volleyball players, knees, ankles, and shoulders. Those really three stick out to me. And happy to just kind of share some of what I've seen anecdotally with you here today.
Yes, I remember one thing. I want to give a shout out to Dr. Chad because he's awesome. I remember I've been in physical therapy in and out since high school, and nothing worked. I always was in pain. Everything always hurt. I just kind of accepted that was my life. I was in about shoulder pain for about 10 years. And then finally, you know, I mean, my surgeon or the orthopedic doctor on base was like, you're going to need surgery. And I was like, no, I'm not. And Chad basically took that and it completely changed it. And I was talking to Alicia about this too, about how important it is to have a physical therapist that is not only on your side, they all are on your side, but on your side and also understands the complexities of like what you do day to day. So with volleyball, with coaching, it wasn't just the stupid, you know, holding a can, empty can test and all that. It was like, how do these things actually apply to hitting a volleyball? And so a lot of the exercises we did were volleyball related, like, okay, if you're going to hit a ball like this, well, let's modify a normal, you know, PT standard book exercise to the sport. And that has completely changed my threshold of what I think is acceptable from physical therapists. So I expect, like when I met, you know, Alicia with my thumb, she knew she was an athlete. She knows how important it is to be able to use your hand in volleyball. So now you are my standard. So everybody should go see you.
I love that. And that's kind of one of my missions of my company, which is Prime Movement over here in Charlotte Physical Therapy, is to really develop and remodel, you know, what people think of as physical therapy. And you really just hit the nail on the head. First, it's like, I always kind of jokingly say this, from dawn until dusk, we need to know what you're doing. Because it's not just, you know, when you're going out there and hitting the ball, how are you sitting? How are you driving? How are you carrying your backpack? Most people don't think about that. That all needs to be looked at because your static postures will drip into your dynamic posture. In other words, if you're sitting slouching all the time, how do you think you're going to perform out there on the volleyball court? You're going to have that same slouch and sit or whatever you do, your posture that's going to be reflected out there. And then the second thing I wanted to just really hit on that I liked that you touched on this is It's like, what is the intent of this exercise, right? With the eyes, Y's, and T's. Let's just take that out because that's perfect. Mm-hmm. It's like, are we just doing this to do it? Am I doing it to strengthen it? You know, or, and probably more what I like is how does this play out on the court, right? So when I fire that muscle, can I feel that fire on the court? Because that's what I know I need to fire in order to do this in a safe way. I think that brings about a whole new intent and focus when people are doing movements, not just quote unquote exercises. The exercise term is kind of mundane and boring and I do my exercises, but how does this play out and translate onto the court with the quality of the movement that I really need to have? Because 9 out of 10 times, it really comes back down to just the quality of your movement, which is a tug of war game, especially in the shoulder with a volleyball hit. 17 muscles that directly connect to that shoulder joint. That's a lot of tug of war, right? That's a lot of opinions that at the end of the day, I use analogy with a shoulder, like that golf ball needs to sit right on the golf tee, like right in the middle. And if one guy's winning that tug of war too much, you could be into impingement. You could be overusing a muscle, which could cause a tendonitis. And so that's kind of the overarching theme that I like to educate my clients with when they're doing their movements, not necessarily quote unquote exercises.
Oh, I like that, movements. It makes it not seem so tedious, I guess. Like, oh, yeah, I gotta do my PT like stuff.
Yeah. Like if people are listening, it's like, if I say exercise, it's like, you know, it's just got that, I gotta go exercise. But how about if we're practicing just quality movement with this, right? And in addition to that, motor, mind, muscle recruitment, we do get it stronger and we just build up better habits of how to move that way. And so that kind of, again, changes the angle and it gives better motivation too, right? If you're doing that, like, this is going to help my serve if I do this movement well versus my therapist told me I need to do 3 sets of 10.
Yep. Ankle injuries at volleyball, it's like, I feel like you can't be a volleyball player until you hurt your ankle. One of the main things. It's more of like an everyday kind of injury, you know, not that sprained ankles are not important, but it's like, oh, right. You sprained your ankle. And a lot of it is jumping and landing wrong, or most commonly when you're at the net with another player, you both jump up, one person's blocking, one person's hitting, they come back down and they land on someone's foot. And so obviously there's some things that you can do as a coach. You can make sure that if the ball is too close to the net, you just let the ball die. You don't do anything with it. But I know that everything always seems to go back to the hips. If you hurt your ankle or your knee hurts, it's probably your hips. So I kind of want to go from ankles, knees, and hips. Like, what are some things that make volleyball players a little bit more susceptible to ankle and knee and hip injuries? And I already know the answer to this because you helped me with this when I saw you. But and what are some things, you know, maybe on a strength and conditioning side that they could do more for injury prevention? That was a long question.
No, I'll kind of like type out some notes here so I make sure I can hit on the bases that I want to. But there's contact injuries to the ankle, and then really there's non-contact, right? I don't know off the top of my head how much is non-contact or contact, but what I've seen is actually more non-contact. They just come down and they land incorrectly and they hurt themselves. But if you think about it, they're so focused on hitting that ball in that split second that they're not focused, why would they be, on their ankle form, technique, preparation to land that. And so that actually gets back to the brain connection and being able to diversify and be able to do a lot of different things, right? Being able to be in full control of your body from head to toe. So it's kind of like you need parts of your brain that are designated to prep the ankle for that landing. And that comes with practice and repetitive movement on a lot of unstable surfaces. So people are like, man, that's me. I may have had an ankle sprain or two, and now I'm heading towards what might be called functional ankle instability. That might be a diagnosis you hear. Or then there's literally mechanical ankle instability, which is radiographic diagnosis that there's increased space in between your bones because your ligaments are kind of shredded because they don't do what they normally do. So again, it's like, what do we have to work with at the ankle? Well, we've got bones, which is our primary structure, ligaments secondary, and then tertiary is our muscles. But those muscles are going to play the biggest role ever. not to get too technical, but you might hear muscles like the tibialis anterior or tibialis posterior. These are really key intrinsic muscles that can help stabilize you in a proper supported position. There are numerous exercises that you can do to teach yourself subconsciously what your proper foot position needs to be first and foremost, right? So a lot of people have to learn, well, what is my most supportive, best, and most optimal ankle position? So first they have to learn that, right? Some of you have too much an arch. A lot of you may have a flat foot or pes planus. You might hear that. So first you just have to teach, oh my gosh, this is how I have to stand. This is how I have to walk, right? And again, I talked about that earlier, that the static drips into the dynamic. So you want to teach yourself just daily habits and build up that repetition. This is my proper ankle. And then we want to get into movements or exercises where you're doing a lot of jumping and where you're training your brain to be thinking about something else. There's a whole host of stuff. And I think we did a few of this with you too, but you want to basically train the brain to be able to handle a lot of different things at once. And yet have someone overlooking you to make sure your ankle and foot hasn't lost its position. So a good example is like jumping down, let's say off an 8-inch box, landing that jump, but you're catching a ball and throwing it back midair. And you're having someone slow motion analyze, did you land that the right way, right? And a progression there would be land with two legs and then land with one leg. And there's a whole host of stuff you can do, but you need to be attentive to the fact that there needs to be a lot of challenges at once to the athlete, not just the mechanical loading, right? Can the ankle load it? Sure. A lot of 19-year-old girls' feet, you know, they can get away with that. But you're late. It's late in the game. You're tired. Your nutrition's down. Muscles aren't firing as well as they need to. So think about that overload threshold that you need to practice. You need to be perfect when you practice, because when it comes late in the game, there's still that chance for error, right? Just from being a competitive athlete. So you need to prevent that and mitigate that as much as possible. And like you said, it's hard to be mutually exclusive between the ankles, knees, and the hips, right? Because if the ankle's in the proper position from a bottom up strategy, that alone is going to help the knees kind of help, you know, motivate them to get in the proper position. Don't get me wrong. It's amazing to me. People can still mess up and I'm like, man, your foot looks perfect, but what are your hips doing? Like, what is that? And so that's where it's giving attention to really the entire lower extremity, right? This one's gonna be hard to verbalize, but I'll try to do it. But you know, some people would try to just manually with sheer force push their knee into the proper position, which causes more harm than good. It's really a top down, like, is your trunk, core, glutes tight, ready to attenuate that load? Because they're the big boys. They're the big muscles that need to attenuate this. The glutes are the biggest muscle in the body, and rightfully so. They should have the most responsibility, but they tend to slack off, and not just volleyball players, but a lot of people. And encouraging and teaching people how to really use that, which if you're listening, can be simply done by learning a proper hip hinge, learning how to get your trunk probably a little bit more forwards with a proper neutral posture. In other words, you're not arching your back, because you don't want your back to hurt. You want your spine to be in what's called a neutral spine. And it's kind of like, let's just delegate this load to the glute. And how can you do that when your volleyball player is, again, late in the game, it's tied 19-19. Do you think they're caring about their form and preventing an injury? No. Nope. People do whatever it takes to hit that shot and win. But those are the people I like working with, right? Being competitive like that. So that's where you have to just go above and beyond and put in the numbers, repetitions with supervision or feedback, right? Where you know you've got that intuitive feedback. That's something else that's just really important to build up. Ask yourself, look yourself in the mirror. Do I have intuitive feedback of what's called proprioception, where I know my body inside and out. I know where it's supposed to be. I know when I messed up. And being able to take that with you onto the court can be really profoundly helpful.
When it comes to ACL, and I talked about this before with on another podcast. So a lot of girls' ACL injuries is they jump up for a ball, and it's usually when they're hitting on the outside, they're right-handed, and they go to hit the ball, and the ball kind of goes over their left shoulder. And so they're reaching over their body to hit the ball, and then all of their weight is kind of shifted on their left side and boom, down on their left foot. And that I was telling the other, I think it was, maybe it was Alicia's, you know, a lot of players, that's their left knee, and they're right-handed. And so one of the things that I do is I have my kids learn how to hit left-handed, like just in case kind of movement, like an emergency move. So, what are some things, you know, aside from that, that players that coaches can kind of encourage players to work on to avoid ACL injuries? I mean, I know it's not, it's, we all want to avoid injuries, but you know, stuff's going to happen.
Right.
So, I think though that some of the stuff you're talking about with the ankle, with proprioception and all that will help. But what about specifically to ACL injuries would be worthwhile?
Yeah, perfect. So we got to think about what typically causes ACL injuries in the first place. Then the research number in my head sticks out. It's like 75 to 80% of people have an ACL tear. It's non-contact. So it's not someone running into you again. It's kind of our own doing, kind of getting our, you know, in our own way. There's actually a slight hormonal angle to that, you know, for females, depending where they're at with their menses in the cycle. It's actually something of consideration, but that's kind of out of control. It's not like you're going to sit someone down just because of where they're at, right? Environmentally, so actually having a shoe that has too much friction on your surface is not good. So you want to kind of find that sweet spot. You obviously don't want to be slipping around out there, but you don't want to be ignorant either. Maybe if you're going to a different gymnasium and you're on the road, you might have a couple pairs of shoes for each athlete. Just make sure you can kind of be adaptable to that. And so you don't have the shoe that's too much friction. That'd probably be most worrisome. Women anatomically have a few different characteristics that make them more likely to have an ACL injury. One of them is a narrower femoral width. So just anatomically, they have a slight increase in predisposition. So what does that leave us with? Neuromuscular control. So that leaves us with what I call force coupling, which is really true of any joint, kind of like the shoulder I mentioned earlier, a tug of war game. Not nearly as many muscles though, right? To connect to the knee. It's a simpler joint. It's a hinge joint, but it does have rotation. And most people forget about this. And the tibia should rotate about 20 to 30 degrees each way. Again, people don't realize that. The ACL that I see is most torn in a non-contact injury with internal rotation, although it can happen with tibial external rotation. So that leaves us with which muscles need to fire better, quicker. And that most often for prevention with females, I found to be hamstrings and, believe it or not, calves. So typically in volleyball players, the way they're, you know, preparing in kind of the squat mode, it's a very quad dominant position for really all athletes, you know, female or male with volleyball. But I tend to see they almost really exaggerate knees way past the toes. They tend to set up in what's called valgus, where their knees are like almost kissing together. And I remember that was something that we had to really work on with you. And that was just something I've always been interested in. I'm like, where do people think and learn that this is the right way to set up for, you know, to prepare for that shot? But everyone kind of gets in this really poor looking squat. Their knees are, again, way too far past the toes. The knees go in, and that kind of, again, that's their static athletic posture, right? Their preparatory posture. Because when they land like that, after they have a lot of rotational forces and you're, you know, going through the eccentric mode of the leg, which is a lot for the leg. And if you're not prepared to handle the anti-rotation, which I think is a key word, that's when we're in for trouble. And then the other word I'll bring up is that you need to learn how to dissociate where you're getting the rotation from, because you should be able to get it through the trunk and the hips. Again, much stronger, bigger muscles that can handle that. You don't want to just rotate from the knee. And that's kind of hard to verbalize, but you can just picture it. When you land, let's use that right-handed player, they're swinging it, they land, let's say the left leg first. That knee, if I were to look at it from a front angle throughout the entire motion, should stay clear. It should stay pointed forwards towards the camera, but you might see everything above the knee rotating with momentum, right? You're not going to stop momentum on a dime, but it should, you should kind of let it play out a little bit, but it should be dispersed through the core and the trunk. And so there are some very simple drills that you can find as well. that you can just learn how to, when you rotate, for example, let me walk you through this one. If you stand just on one leg, all right, first off, your balance should be rock solid there. And a lot of athletes have a lot of trouble just standing on one leg, especially with the proper ankle position, the whole kinetic chain position. Let's say we're working on our left leg. And let's say you rotate your heart all the way to the left. That's a good case where your knee shouldn't move at all, right? And that's just with just body weight and without any resistance. And then from there, you could progress it by having someone, you could throw a medicine ball to someone to the left, and then you could catch it, and that knee shouldn't move at all. And that can be progressed really easy. 3, 5, 10 pounds is a lot when you're standing on one leg without any leverage. So doing some drills like that, it does come back to some level of proprioception and being able to have the ability to control your knee in the heat of the game, right? Being able to be challenged cognitively with everything that's going on. So I would be, if I'm really looking to prevent, if I'm a 20-year-old female, let's just say, and I'm going into my senior year of volleyball, I got a college scholarship coming up. Off season, you better believe I'm training hamstrings and calves within my plyometric exercises. So that doesn't mean I'm going to go sit over there at the gym machine and do calf raises. I want to be clear with that. You need to learn how to fire these muscles with plyometric exercises. A good way to think about that with calves, when you first land, it should be on your toes, right? With like a double-legged squat jump. Most people's heels come crashing down right away as soon as their feet contact the ground, which tells me that their calves are not playing at all. And it's just going straight up the river, usually to the joint, knee joint, and maybe or quads from most people I've seen. Get yourself that neutral spine, trunk leaning forwards, butt back. Try to decrease the time at which your heels contact the ground. And you'll notice that you feel your calves starting to fire. In addition to that, making sure that the foot is just in the proper position when doing so. So you're not rolled too far out, which is usually people's sprain. And so again, you really can't isolate each joint when you're talking such a multi-joint sport like volleyball. But those are just some tidbits to start to get you thinking about the specificity of the sport, which is very, very commonly overlooked. Everyone wants to give people a sheet of exercises that's cookie cutter. And it's got to be so much better than that. Your fitness professionals will be so much better than that. What we do at Prime Movement is with every exercise that my client needs, and sometimes I tell them, listen, I don't think you can remember this. I'm going to do it for you anyways right now. But I'll record them with a video. I'll slow it down. We'll draw on it. Because if I'm only with someone an hour or two a week, right? How many other hours is that in the week? Not to mention, they're out there playing the sport on their own on volleyball, right? They're not going to, that'd be weird if I was like out there like, hey, do this, Sarah. Get down. Like, on your knee. Rotate now. Stop.
Right. Yeah,
probably, although it'd be a pretty funny commercial.
That would be awesome. I'd pay
for that. Oh yeah, exactly. But you get the idea. It should be built subconsciously, like a tree. It takes time to really root itself way down and spread a lot of roots into the kind of quote unquote subconscious mind. So it's just putting in the work, right? Are you willing to not only go to this extent, but are you willing to be dedicated and consistent in the off season? Because now we're getting to a potentially different roadblock, right? Now you know what to do. But are you really willing to put in the work in the off season? And there goes another 50% of people. And I'm kind of hard on people if they get hurt. I'm like, well, if they were educated, if they knew what to do, if they just didn't put in the work, there's no miracle cures out there. But it will save you from a lifetime of agony, injuries down the road. I treat a lot of people who are in the 40s and 50s. And they all recall that one high school moment. They had this one high school surgery. And it comes to back to bite you. And I know it's so hard when we're young to not to think like that, but it changes quickly. So really dig deep, work hard in the off season, find someone that really cares and will go the extra distance to give you really sport specific care and movements. And then it's, being consistent, putting in the work.
The whole process really made me think about what you were just saying about our position. So for volleyball coaches, our like passing ready athletic position to get ready to pass. So we, as coaches, we even say all right, when I tell kids, when I teach them how to do the posture, it's hands on your knees. Like, as if you're hanging out you know, and then let go of your arms. And so your shoulders are naturally over your knees are over your toes.
Right.
And so of course you're going to have like knee pain and hip pain. And I even think like the hip pain part even comes way later because it's something that I didn't really have until recently. I mean, in the last 5 years or so. And you're saying how, you know, it's a very quad heavy position to be in. And I mean, if you ask a girl right now to like lay down on, you know, sit down on the floor and try to reach and touch her toes, probably going to have a little difficulty doing that. And I think that the hips and making sure that your hips are in good shape in general, is so underrated and not really thought about, because I don't think a lot of kids have hip problems now, but they will in like 10, 15 years.
Yeah. If you think about it, I mean, the rectus femoris, that's quad, but that also crosses the hip. So that's a hip muscle. And then your hamstrings are double, you know, they cross two different joints, right? So they pass the knee and then they connect to the hip. So it's funny. People try to say like, let me strengthen my knee muscles and forget the hips. And it's like, those are kind of the same thing. And at the end of the day, you really need to make sure that the engine of the body, the hips, are really, really doing their job. And it gets a little almost redundant for those who have been even kind of injured. They're like, yeah, my hips and my glutes. But even then, we see a lot of people who have tried physiotherapy near us. We've seen a lot of people who already tried chiropractic route, massage therapy, Rolfing, you name it, foo-foo, weird stuff. They've tried everything, and then they'll come to us and they're like, yeah, my hips. And I was like, all right, you know, show me some of the exercise you're doing. And it never ceases to amaze me how often people are still, when they're doing their hip quote unquote exercises to kind of recalibrate, fire their glutes, they're firing the wrong muscles.
Mm-hmm.
So typically people are still overcompensating using their hip flexors, some of the front lateral muscles of like on the outside of the hip, like the IT band or the TFL fascia. And there's a really small nasty muscle called the gluteus minimus that people really overcompensate with. And it's like they're eating all the neural tone that should be headed posterior to the backside to the glutes. And I can see it right away. And so you really need to be picky about who's observing you. And you really need to kind of feel during those movements and exercises, which muscles are firing. So for example, most people have heard of a form of a clamshell, right? Where you're lying on your side. That's one of the most butchered exercises I've ever seen. People let their hips rotate back. They're having a conversation and a latte basically when they're doing it. And that's how you know you're doing it completely wrong.
Oh yeah.
That should be a really hard exercise if done properly, and granted with elastic bands, you can progress it. But most people have a hard time just firing the muscle. And so you need to be microscopic about that. Make sure you're getting it where you need to. And if you don't, find someone that can really help you figure that out. But the hips are almost always incorporated to some extent with my volleyball players, whether you're in your stance position, whether you just landed from a spike, passing, setting, doesn't really matter. Like they're going to need to be, at the very minimum, attenuating force to some degree, right? And they're your biggest muscles. It's like your superstar at the assembly line who needs to be doing like all the work. But if they're like half-assing it and only there a couple hours a day, you're going to have a problem with that. You're not going to get the end product that you want.
I love that. Hips are the engine of the body. I didn't really think about that before.
So with baseball, volleyball, anything even overhead, you have to look at the entire body. And I got to get this little blurb in there. In typical models, like sometimes your insurance will provide or won't allow your professional to look at other places or treat other places, right? It's like, yeah. Oh, you're there for shoulder. So you can only do shoulder stuff. But that's not how it works. Like if you're going to jump, and let's say you have that injury that's nagging you in the background, but it's not a primary complaint to your left hip. If you can't generate force or land the way you need to, let's say you're serving with your right arm or you're spiking, guess who's going to have to make up that work? The right shoulder. Now it's like, if it's a car, it's like, we're going to turn this up the RPM number. And you and I both know, if I'm driving my car around with 7 RPMs all the time, it's just cranking it. that car is not going to last nearly as long. There's going to be problems with it. It's just kind of overheating. Yeah. And so therefore, your left big toe could make a huge difference if you're serving or spiking or whatever. Because at that moment, in that case, we're limited in toe extension, which you need to have like 70 degrees and most people don't, then all of a sudden you're already behind, right? You're already behind optimal and you haven't even gotten into the mid part of the foot yet. But that's like the attention that you should look at from literally opposite toe to opposite shoulder. And if you were to imagine like drawing a line of where the kinetic energy is going and having kind of a checklist with each and every one of those body parts, it's like, all right, ankles, are you doing your job? Check. Right? Working up to the knee, everything good here, check. And the minute you hit a roadblock, it's like, that's the first place I'm going. It's time to start cleaning it up.
One thing I want to finish up with is, and I didn't have it on my list of questions, but I think that when you're in PT and you're dealing with injuries, there's a mental component to it, a mental side to it. And this is something that when I was working with you, like I really had to kind of undo a lot of, you know, lots of years of shoulder trauma and physical, like emotional trauma almost. And so, I mean, I tell people sometimes, I was like, I remember there was this one day I just started to cry. It didn't even like hurt that bad, but I just started to cry because I was like, I was so terrified of hurting myself. And so what has been your experience with, you know, that mental side with athletes, when you're working on these rehabs and these movements? And you could talk about how crazy I am. It's fine. Everybody knows I'm crazy, so it's okay.
No, I mean, not at all. Like, you're actually more the average. And the problem is that most people aren't getting to that level where you're digging into that, right? It's typically like, hey, you check out that Bears game or, you know, whatever, talking baseball, whatever. But you should be really digging to all aspects of pain. If you think pain's only mechanical, you're really wrong. Really, really wrong. It can create so much anxiety, which in itself sets off a whole cascade of hormones and fear. And it's one of the most overlooked aspects of care that's out there. And it affects people socially too, right? So if you're like rehabbing your shoulder and you're known as the person with a bum shoulder, but it's actually better, and someone asks you, hey, how's your shoulder doing? You have an option right there. And you might find yourself going, yeah, it's not too, oh, wait a minute, it's actually fine, right? So that in itself, really, it gets down to who you are. So that's what really is the big kahuna here, is that it will tap into your identity. And as an athlete, if you've always been hitting the serves and just being kind of a big shot and killing everything, and now you got this injury, now you don't have confidence in swinging that because you don't want to hurt yourself. Now, are you the same person?
Yeah, I never had a physical therapist before, like actually look at the mental side of the injuries that I had. I mean, I was literally like weeks before the doctor saying, well, you're going to need surgery if this doesn't get any better. And that my identity as a volleyball coach and a player was totally at risk. And so every little thing I'm like, oh no, what is this? And, you know, now I actually have taken that moment, and when things do kind of feel weird or that doesn't feel very right, I kind of take a step back and go, okay, is this pain due to something positive, like actually being wrong? Or am I putting myself in a position because I don't have good posture right now, and I'm putting myself in a position that I can just easily fix it?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think it's underrated for sure.
That's so powerful for, you know, for anyone to be able to step back. Our initial emotion is fear, worry, and that's okay. Like, the amygdala is part of the brain, and that's our oldest part of our brain. Like, it's been there forever. We're just emotional beings. It's actually helped keep us alive, I'm sure, to where we are nowadays. So you just have to be able to work with that and understand it's okay to have that flurry of emotions. But then almost always there's some rationale why it's there, and it's okay. We have a lot of body parts to keep track of, if you haven't noticed. And that's only from the mechanic side of things. That's not hormonal. That's not other, you know, mental barriers and things going on in our life nowadays or external things. So giving yourself some sort of grace and forgiveness is actually really powerful too. And there is almost always something that you're doing wrong. The pain is just telling you, hey, we've got a weak link here. You need to check this out. You're not doing something quite right. And so you could actually look at it, if you're really good, as more of a, hey, if this pain were telling you, it's trying to help you, would that change the way you look at it? And a lot of times it's, yeah, okay, all right. It's almost like, hey, my bad. I didn't mean to do that. Let me go back and let's check up and let's see what we need to do. So see if you can change the whole feedback loop when you're going through pain, and that'll be really powerful. And it's stuff, like you said, I love it. It sticks with people forever. Because what I pride myself on is really the long, long-term change. And usually it's in between the ears. Give someone a new mentality. You change their life. Don't just get people out of pain in 6 weeks.
Right. You changed my life. Oh,
love it.
Okay. So I want to give you a chance to plug yourself, but I want to say, like, if you go to his website, like on his Facebook page, he has so many awesome videos. Like, I can't tell you how many times I share them with my husband and go, hey, this is what Dr. Chad said you should do for your workouts. Cause his back hurts and he's stubborn and doesn't want to listen to me. So I go, hey, you should do this for your shoulder workouts. So you have fabulous videos. Like,
awesome.
I had time to like watch all of them. But every time I see him, like, I know this is going to be good, or I just like it anyway, cause I go, I know it's going to be awesome. So feel free to plug yourself, but guys, they're really good videos. So
that's awesome. I appreciate that. Cause it's taken time over the course of years to learn how to put out content that's digestible, right? Yeah. I'm not speaking to a physical therapy audience. I'm speaking to a lot of people that have no idea what's going on with their shoulder. And so that's a different type of language and presentations. There's definitely a marketing component I'm trying to, you know, keep getting better at. But nonetheless, check us out at Prime Movement. That's PR1, the number one ME movement. And so it's primemovement.com. You can check out our website, check out our Facebook, Instagram. I don't tweet. I tend to put out more video related content, and also YouTube too. We've got just at this point, kind of a ridiculous amount of YouTube videos. I haven't figured out like all the, there's like a bunch of subscription hacks, you know, you can figure out all that, but I'm continued to figure out just by goodwill to put out good videos out there. So we've organized them into low back pain, shoulder pain, etc. Feel free to reach out, and happy to direct you, if nothing else, to the right person, because I'm connected with a whole host of tightly knit, upper tier fitness and health professionals that I can always refer you to in that area. Because it's bigger than that. You know, we want to help you just find the right person. And it makes a really big difference.
Well, thank you again for coming on this, for the episode. And, I'll put links to everything in my description so people can find you directly. So thank you so much.
Yeah, this was fun. I appreciate the opportunity.